Maya, that you?
I want to come home, Mother. Send for me, please.
I hadn't died. My father didn't take me to the hospital. He took me to a friend's house where my wound was bandaged. He gave me a dollar and a half and a kiss and promised to drop by later. By the time he returned, I'd run away. I'd spent an educational month in California, living in an abandoned car in a junkyard with a group of homeless kids, before I finally made that call to Mother.
I'll send an air ticket to your daddy.
It'll be easier if you send my fare straight to the airline. I can pick it up there.
Oh, of course, Maya. Of course. See you soon, baby.
I arrived in San Francisco, looking leaner than usual, fairly unkempt, and with no luggage.
Maya, over here.
Hello, Mother.
Is the rationing that bad at your father's? Come on, you better have some food to stick to all those bones.
Mother's house in San Francisco seemed smaller and quieter after the trip south. Adults had lost the wisdom from the surface of their faces. My brother Bailey had left home, and my room had all the cheeriness of a dungeon.
I've made up my mind, Mother. I'm going to work. I know I'm only 15, but I'm a year ahead of my grade. I want a break from school to be self-sufficient, and...
I knew Mother wouldn't be difficult to convince. After all, she was the original do-it-yourself girl.
What kind of job, Maya? Have you thought what you're most fitted for?
They have women working on the streetcars as conductors now because of the war. That's what I'd like to do.
I already pictured myself sailing up and down the hills of San Francisco in a dark blue uniform with a money changer at my belt.
They don't accept colored people on the streetcars.
Oh.
My first reaction was disappointment, then.
That's just not fair.
Indignation.
I will be a conductorette. I will sling a money changer from my belt. I will.
To a state of stubbornness where the mind is locked like the jaws of an enraged bulldog.
Well, nothing beats a trial but a failure. Give it everything you got.
In the offices of the Market Street Railway Company, the receptionist seemed as surprised to see me there as I was surprised to find the interior dingy and the decor drab. I had expected waxed surfaces and carpeted floors. I might have decided against working for such a poor mouth looking concern. As it was, I said,
I would like to apply for a job as a conductorette.
Have you come from an agency?
No.
Agency staff only.
I am applying for the job listed in this morning's Chronicle, and I'd like to be presented to your personnel manager.
He's out. For the day.
She swiveled away from me in her chair.
May I ask his name?
She swiveled back.
Whose name?
Your personnel manager.
The personnel manager?
We were both playing out our roles in this crummy waiting room, bound to duel to the death.
Oh, that's Mr. Cooper. He's out. I'm not sure you'll find him in tomorrow either, but you can try.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
For the next 3 weeks...
Morning.
Morning.
My trips to the streetcar office...
Morning.
Morning.
...were off the frequency of a person on a salary.
Morning.
Morning.
And then eventually...
Morning. Here.
They were job application forms.
To be filled in triplicate.
Sitting at a side table. The standard questions required dexterous lying. My mind and I wove a cat's ladder of near truths and total lies and wrote the fable of Marguerite Johnson, aged...
19?
Former employer?
Companion and driver to... Mrs. Annie Henderson, white lady in Stamps, Arkansas.
I was given blood tests, physical coordination tests, and psychology tests. Then, on a blissful day...
Step forward in the car, please.
I was hired as the first Negro on the San Francisco streetcars for one whole semester. the streetcars and I shimmied up and scooted down the sheer hills of San Francisco. My work shifts were split so haphazardly that it was easy to believe that my superiors had chosen them maliciously. And when spring classes began, I resumed my commitment to formal education.
She did not quite know for what she was weeping. She only knew that some great sense of loss, some great sense of incompleteness possessed her.
The Well of Loneliness was my introduction to lesbianism and what I thought of as pornography. After my third reading of it, I became a bleeding heart for the downtrodden, misunderstood lesbians.
Are you born a lesbian? Or do you become one?
It was during this reflective time that I examined my own body more.
What is that?
Which just seemed to fuel my confusion. So when my stepfather, a very good man, Daddy Cliddell, was at the club one evening, I sat down on the side of Mother's bed.
Mother, I've got to talk to you.
Okay.
Mother, my pocketbook.
Really? Do you mean your vagina? Don't use those southern terms. There's nothing wrong with the word vagina. It's a clinical term. Now, what's wrong with it? Well, have you got crabs?
I don't know, Mother.
Oh, you'd know if you had them. You don't have a venereal disease, do you?
Why, Mother, of course not. That is a terrible question.
Sit down, Riddy.
Oh, Mother, something is growing on my vagina.
Oh, Riddy. Go get me the big Webster's Dictionary. Then read me what it says next to the word vulvar. There's nothing to worry about, baby. It happens to every woman. It's just human nature.
I'm too tall. My feet are big. And I have no hips or breasts or anything. I thought maybe I was turning into a lesbian.
I made arrangements a long time ago to have a boy and a girl. The man upstairs, he don't make mistakes. He gave you to me to be my girl. And that's just what you are. Now, have a glass of milk, and you go back to bed.
What I needed was a boyfriend. A boyfriend's acceptance of me would guide me into the strange, exotic land of frills and femininity. Up the hill from my house lived two handsome brothers. If I could hook one temporarily, I might be able to work the relationship into something more lasting. One evening, the brother I had chosen came walking directly into my trap.
Would you like to have sexual intercourse with me?
His mouth hung open like a garden gate.
Take me somewhere.
We went to his friend's house, who left us alone in his room. The seductee turned off the lights. I would have preferred them left on, but didn't want to appear more aggressive than I had been already, if that was possible. I had anticipated long, soulful kisses and gentle caresses, but instead the time was spent in laborious groping, pullings, yankings, and jerkings. Not one word was spoken. 3 weeks later, having thought very little of that strange and strangely empty night, I found myself pregnant. Mother was tied up tighter than Dick's hatband in the weave of her own life. She saw me grow more buxom, but didn't suspect. And when I was 6 months gone...
Oh, save some cereal for Daddy, Marguerite. I'm going now, darling. I'll be back before you know it.
Mother left to open a nightclub in Alaska. It was quite an achievement. I mean, how many Negroes are there in Alaska? She was gone, and I felt treacherous, not telling her the news. 2 months more slipped by, and I was adapting to the pregnancy, although I still didn't link it to having a baby. 2 days after V-Day, and 8 months pregnant, I stood with my San Francisco summer school class at Mission High School, and received my diploma. That evening, I left a note on Daddy Cliddell's bed.
Dear parents, I am sorry to bring this disgrace on the family, but I am pregnant. Marguerite.
There was some confusion after that, because when I told my stepfather I was due to have the baby in 3 weeks, he told Mother I was 3 weeks pregnant.
She's more than any 3 weeks,
said Mother on her return.
Who's the boy, Maya? Do you want to marry him?
No.
Does he want to marry you?
No.
Well, that's that. No use ruining 3 lives.
And in the next 2 weeks, I whirled around the city, going to the doctors, taking vitamins, and buying clothes for the baby, and then... My son was born. I had a baby, and he was beautiful, and he was mine, totally mine. No one had bought him for me or helped me through it. I had help in the conception, but no one could deny that I had had an immaculate pregnancy. He was totally my possession, and I was afraid to touch him.
He's perfect. He's so tiny, like he's unfinished.
I would sit and look at him for hours. But I was so afraid of my clumsiness.
Mother, will you change him?
I can't keep doing this for you.
I just don't want to crush him. Please.
It's okay. There. Wake up, Maya. Your baby needs you. Let him lie with you.
No, please. Please, I'll roll over and crush him.
Nonsense. Just lie next to him.
And there he was. Beautiful. Laying on his back in the center of my bed, smiling at me. I edged in. Bit by bit, until we were snuggled up close.
See? Don't think about doing the right thing. Just do it.
She turned out the light and left. I was lying on my stomach with my baby, and he was sleeping, touching my side.
Sleep tight, my beautiful baby.